Okay, so I really did just type up this PowerPoint. I wasn't going to tell you guys, but Elspeth called me out. Andrea Gibbs spoke this morning for Insights, and she's speaking, doing the morning ones because I work in the mornings, and then she's busy at night, so we're kind of swapping off, and I thought she would leave me her PowerPoint, and she didn't, so I had to wing this one. So I'm sorry there's no fun pictures because there's no internet connection back there for some reason, but I hope you guys enjoyed this homework as much as I enjoyed writing it, and I'm sorry it was a lot. In fact, actually, the day I emailed it to my aunt, I had finished writing out this homework, and she emailed me back with an email. She hadn't even seen mine, saying how they had scheduled someone else to talk, and they didn't need the homework, so don't spend my time doing it. And I was like, it's not always how it works. So they let me keep it in there anyways, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. This is like what I'm passionate about. I actually pulled it all from a paper I wrote in college. Almost all of it came directly from that, so I didn't put a ton of effort into it. But I studied Bible at a small Christian school, and one of my first classes, I had grown up at Kensington, I didn't realize that in normal churches, women don't speak very often from the main stage, and I didn't realize that this was a controversial doctrine until one of my first classes, and they started talking about it, and I had to sit there and pretend like I knew what the Bible said about it when I really had no idea. So I spent a lot of time in college reading up on women, especially the ones in the New Testament, because they're fascinating, and they have such short little sentences that they give you that you have to really dig to find out what they're talking about. And I had so much fun working with Andrea Gibbs on this. I don't know if you guys know her. If you don't, try to. She's wonderful, but she really pulled this theme from the homework that I did out of Galatians, because the book of Galatians is phenomenal. You don't need this extra week in here. You really could just sit and think about Galatians for another week. But it is, it ties in so beautifully because of exactly what this is about, what these women have received from the Lord. If you guys had to summarize Galatians in like a sentence or a word, what is like the main thing? Don't look up the verse that's up there. Just tell me. Grace. What else?
Freedom.
Yeah, that's about it. Grace and freedom. Two concepts that we kind of set aside a lot in our culture as we try to do a lot of other things in our walk with God and in our Christianity. And that's why I love these women, because these are all women that were completely set free by God. And we're going to walk through a bunch of them, the ones that you looked at, and talk about exactly what they were set free from. But they were also women that stayed free and that pursued God afterwards. And so we're looking at, what is it? I guess the question really is how are we living free? And what do we learn from these women? Do we just read, oh, cool, like, Jesus really loved people. Like, is that what we found when we read this? Like, yeah, partly. But what are you taking with you? What are you seeing into your own freedom? Some of these women had stories that were horrendous. Others had stories that were incredibly boring. And yet, all of them were valued and were freed from something by Jesus. And so as we work through this, I want you guys to be thinking about your own story. I want you to be thinking about the stories of people you love. How have you been set free? And how are you staying free? This is the New Testament women are fun. The Old Testament ones we talk about a little bit in the beginning just because they're in the genealogy, but the New Testament ones are fun because they're this radical story. We read it pretty casually, like, oh, that was nice, God healed that woman. You know, that's pretty cute. Like, and then we keep going, we're like, oh, wow, he like let Mary listen to him instead of working in the kitchen. Like, that's nice. When really, like, as you did your homework, I hope you found that every time he did something, every time he encountered a woman, it was radical according to the laws and the customs of the time. Rabbis didn't have female disciples. That wasn't a thing. There weren't women in schools. There wasn't this education system. For Mary to sit at the feet of Jesus was a very radical move. So, like, as you read these stories, I hope you heard the whispers of almost feminism that comes in there. Not the modern extreme feminism we're talking about, the feminism of bringing women to a level of equality, not only in their culture, but also in relationship to God. So, this is the verse we're looking at. So, Christ has truly set us free. Now, make sure that you stay free and don't get tied up again in slavery to the law. We're going to look at, like, the two sides of that, of what have you been freed from? How has God set you free? And how are you staying free? And a lot of times, the staying free is the part that isn't exactly what it seems. Let's see if this works. So, Tamar was the first woman in the lineage of Jesus. I got to speak on her last Insights, or you might have heard Karen So I'm super passionate about Tamar. But in general, she was freed from a ton of junk. She was freed. She was a woman, a teenage bride, who was abused by her family and then abandoned. And then she tricked her father-in-law into giving her a child so that she could carry on the family line. Really crazy story. She doesn't encounter Jesus. He wasn't alive at this time. But she does encounter freedom. She encounters freedom when she finally completes her story and is given a child and a life and a future. So God sets her free from a lot of things. Then there's Rahab, a prostitute. A successful prostitute is a funny way to think about it, but she had her own inn. She was running her own business, so probably started out as a prostitute and worked it up into becoming kind of more of an inn system. She was set free when she hid the spies of Caleb and Joshua and hid them in her temple, in her ceiling in the inn, and then later was freed from, what's that place? Jericho, before it fell. Then there's Ruth, who was freed from, she was a foreigner, a widow, incredibly poor. No one knew who she was, begging in the fields behind everyone else. Wasn't even poor enough to be, you know, just working the streets, but was literally begging behind the people that were working the fields. There was Bathsheba, and this is a tricky one. Was she a victim or was she a harlot? The scripture doesn't tell you. There is no clear way to view her story, but there is a certain element of freedom and a certain element of pain in her life. Mary, mother of Jesus, what was she set free from? An ordinary life, I suppose. Normalcy? She got to bear the son of Jesus. I would say that's freeing, but also terrifying. She became a teenage, unwed, pregnant woman who was nearly divorced or broken up with by her fiancé. So these are the Old Testament women. These are women. Only the last one actually met Jesus. The rest of them, this is who Jesus decides to portray in his family line. The blood of these women runs into Jesus. And then we get to the New Testament, where Jesus starts encountering women that are mentioned way too briefly for my preference. Mary Magdalene, who was literally set free from 7 demons that possessed her. Mary and Martha, the catty spinster sisters who were set free. One of them, a little bit of workaholic. The other one, often preached as lazy, more likely could be preached as intellectual or eager to learn, I suppose. The Samaritan woman at the well, rejected by 5 husbands. This is a common one, misunderstood, because we think, oh, well, she's alone because she's pretty promiscuous. A woman couldn't divorce a man. She didn't get to make that choice. If she was divorced, it was because her husband rejected her. And when Jesus encounters her, she's been divorced, rejected by 5 men. Whether it was something as simple as she wasn't having children or something as, you know, she was a horrible wife, we don't know. But she's a very broken woman when she meets Jesus, and she is very set free. And we're going to come back to these women and look a little bit more at the post of meeting Jesus, of what happens after the fact. But right now, I just want you to think about what the rest of these women were like. Then we have these, Lydia, Phoebe, Priscilla, Junia, and others that you guys worked on in your homework. Kind of, sometimes their name is just mentioned once, other times, you know, they get a little more detail. A lot of them you wouldn't even read, you would just skim over 1,000 times unless you really looked at what the meaning of the word was that describes them. But what we do notice is their past is never mentioned. I don't think any of these women had a past that was brought up. We have no idea what they were freed from. But I think the point is that they're in here because they were given this radical freedom. They're met at the moment that they are freed by God, whether it was by Jesus himself or by Paul. So I want to backtrack a minute, and I want to do something really quick, because it's easy to look at these women and detach ourselves from their stories. Oh, well, you know, that's a bummer. You had to glean in the fields. Not really sure what that's like. I don't think anyone here has ever gleaned a field. We don't connect necessarily with their story. So I'm going to make you guys close your eyes really quick. I'm sorry if you're the kind of person that hates these kind of things. But I'm going to read back through specific words that describe these women. And I want you to listen to these words and think about if God is speaking any of them to you as to what he has set you free from. Tamar was freed from abuse, fear, isolation. Rahab from prostitution, from faithless world, from faithless surroundings, and from immediate danger. Ruth from loneliness, set free from poverty, from hunger, from begging. Bathsheba, from widowhood, from single parenthood, maybe even free from death. Mary, from a life of normalcy. Magdalene, set free from Satan himself, from oppression, from depression. Sisters, from purposelessness, from drudgery, from cooking, from being overlooked. Samaritan woman freed from her rejection. And the other women from their sin, from their past, from bondage, from silence, from illness, from death row. You guys can open your eyes. Christ has truly set you free from these things. These are not things that we need to live in any longer. This bondage passed. He freed them, and in the same way, is freeing each of us. And the point is not looking at, oh, they're before and after, and okay, like here's my checklist of what I need to do. The point is that these women didn't have great backgrounds. They didn't have criteria that they met. Some of them, we don't hear what they do after they meet Jesus. We don't know. All we know is that Jesus saved them because of who he was, set free because of how he is, not ourselves. We're going to come back to that, but let's go back to our verse. The second sentence in that verse. Now make sure that you stay free and don't get tied up again in slavery to the law. And this is the idea of persevering, the idea of persisting in freedom, of standing firm, of the two different times free is used are two different words in the original Greek. They are, the first one is the idea of liberty, liberty to do as you please. So Christ has truly set us free to do as we please. Now make sure you stay free in terms of the freedom of being able to do or not do anything that doesn't determine salvation. So it's a little tricky, the wording there. But the idea behind it is to make sure you stay free in Christ and keep the freedom to do as you please, which is very contrary to how I was raised. But I want to look deeper at kind of these women and how they stayed free. But first I want to talk about, like, what does it mean to stay free? What do they mean bondage? What do they mean slavery to the law? These women had real laws. Like, their voices didn't count in court. Luckily, we can be on a jury. They weren't allowed to initiate divorce. They weren't allowed to make a ton of decisions. They weren't really considered citizens. And that's not really an issue anyone in this room is facing today. There are women in the world who are, but that is not our immediate issue. But I want to look in a lighter way at the little things that we may do and what it really means to stay free. So these are real rules that Andrea found if you want to be a member to something called the Private Club. So I pulled out my favorites. Members and their guests are expected to abide by these membership rules, and violation of the rules may subject the member to suspension or forfeiture of their membership. Okay, it's a typical private club, I guess. So you're forbidden to bring any food or beverage to the club. This is my favorite. Good order, proper hygiene, and appropriate attire and consideration of the rights and comforts of others must be observed at all times. Rubber pool caps must be worn by all members and guests with long hair. We're getting a little biblical there. Smoking is not permitted in all enclosed areas. Members and guests are required to follow the parking and traffic regulations. Parking in reserved, restricted, or unmarked areas will result in the removal of offending cars at the expense of the registered owner. And walking bare feet is not permitted outside the pool and locker areas. There was like 17 rules, and I just didn't have time to type them all up. But this is a very detailed place. And at the end, it tells you that if you don't abide by these rules, they would reserve the right to escort you off the premises. This was not the pool club I belonged to when I was growing up. Definitely not. I don't ever remember having shoes on. And I definitely brought my own food. And I think this is kind of the idea that we get. We think, okay, I'm in. I'm set free. I'm a Christian. And now let's stay here. Let's eliminate things from my life. Let's set some rules up to keep me in the private club. Let's follow these rules. But this is not... It doesn't sound like a very joyful club. I don't picture people putting their rubber pool caps on with, like, you know, their Heineken and throwing a party. You know, like, no, you picture them putting their rubber pool caps in and staying very still and not running around in bare feet. It doesn't sound like a party. It sounds like a school gym class is what it sounds like. What Jesus is inviting you to when he sets you free, his is a backyard barbecue. It means come without shoes on, or come with your shoes on and trek them through the living room. It means, you know, sit on his deck. It means laugh and eat and grill hamburgers and be noisy and, you know, don't wear a rubber pool cap. It's kind of this idea of, like, this is his own existence. This is his own backyard, and it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be joyful. It is not supposed to be a place where you put on your best clothes and where you make sure you're behaving exactly as you should. It's a place where you come because he wants you exactly how you are. Because that is how he made you. He chose you to be the way you are. So the question is, are you free from the weight and oppression of trying to stay in the club? And if you are, then what are you free to do? Who did God make you to be? What gifts and talents has he given you to have fun using for him? The example that Andrea pulled was the idea of, we've all had it happen when there's a bug, we'll call it a butterfly, in between a screen door and the window. And so it tells a story a little bit about how you open the window to let it out. And then it just stays there. Where, like, in my case, you crack it a little bit and you just wait for it to, like, find its way out. It's normally a fly, but... And sometimes if you open it, it just stays. It stays on the screen, still not going to freedom. And my reaction is a little different than Jesus. I'm like, stupid bug. Like, it just drives me crazy. Like, get out of the screen. You know, I'm starting to get violent with it. But that is not how God works. He's sitting there saying, please come. I have opened this door, and I have invited you to be free. Why are you staying? Why are you living in slavery? Why are you tying yourself back up to the law? So we're going to go back to these women now. And we're going to talk about maybe what God freed them to do, and the example that they set, and how did they live their lives and stay free, and what did it look like then to stop striving to stay in the club. So let's walk back through. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, and Mary all kind of had different stories. Tamar got to carry on her family line. We don't know much of what happened after that. Rahab also, obviously, got to join the family. Ruth was saved, was given children, was given a life of wealth, prosperity, and a full stomach again. Bathsheba, we don't really know. Again, her story is really up in the air. But she was given a life of comfort. Her son does become king, and she becomes queen mother. And Mary lives a life of following her son around and getting to see the life that he lives. This is an interesting one. Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene was set free to enjoy Jesus. She is set free from 7 demons. Some people rumor she was probably a prostitute. We don't really know. We do know that she bought some very, very expensive perfume and poured it all over Jesus' feet. So she was free to give radically and in a not very Dave Ramsey-ish way. She was free to be emotional and weepy and grateful. Things that I often keep myself from being because I am scared of being emotional or weepy because of the kind of way that that's portrayed in our culture. But you know what? She remains constant. She stays at the foot of the cross when all of Jesus' male disciples are gone. She doesn't flee his presence. She follows him all the way to the end and is rewarded by being the first one at the tomb of Jesus. That is a huge deal. I hope you guys read the little notes in there about her proof of constancy, as well as one of the proofs that the Bible is not made up, because no one would make up that a woman would be found first, because, like I said, her voice wasn't even valid in court. But Jesus greets her first, and what does she do when she sees him? She gets all weepy and emotional again and throws herself all over him, and he does not mind one bit. Because he created her that way. That wasn't a surprise or a mistake or the pain of her life that made her like that. That was how she was made to be. Mary and Martha. I love these two girls. Mary is free to listen and learn. She's free to study Jesus. She's free not to serve, not to work, not to be hospitable. Martha, on the other hand, we see this story, you know, when she's working really hard to serve Jesus. Well, if you read later on in the Bible, she's still serving Jesus at another thing. And I think she was free and moved from the need to do it to the love of doing it. Free from, oh, I'm serving because I have to serve these men. Free from serving men to serving Jesus. Because she wanted to and not because she was supposed to. There's a Samaritan woman at the well who the Bible labels as, a lot of scholars call her, the first evangelist ever. She's the first one to ever run to people and say, Jesus is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. She was free to use her past to do so. She was free to use the ugliness of her past, people that wouldn't listen to her, and go and proclaim to them who Jesus was and what he had done. There was Lydia, who was free to open her home, to be hospitable, to be a leader in the early church. There was Phoebe, who was free to teach others about Jesus. Am I skipping someone? Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, I'm just out of order. Phoebe was free to be a deacon, a wise servant, a word that was normally only applied to men. Also means she was a leader. Priscilla was free to teach others about Jesus, free to teach alongside her husband, and free to be a friend and equal of Paul's. Junia, free to be an apostle, is what she's called, a leader. And there's others, women that were just free to be healed and then go about their life, living a much happier, normal, pain-free existence. These women grew up in a culture built around laws. You all heard the Pharisees were the people that followed the law. So the first five books, the biggest books in the Bible that are very hard to read straight through, those were the laws. And the Pharisees went and created tons of other laws around those laws so that you couldn't get close to breaking the ones that were in the Bible. And how much have I done that in my own life? This is so funny that this talk, you guys, when I sat down with Andrea and she started telling me what we're talking about, I could have melted into my chair. Because I was like, this is exactly what God has been teaching me since the first of this year, when I made the New Year's resolution to disappoint people. Because I had an ability to say no to things, which is why I'm up here speaking. No, but I was driving the other day, and I was thinking what a rough year this has been, and how I really don't feel like I'm myself, how I feel like I've really been, you know, wondering, trying to find, you know, where I fit, and I was praying while I was crying, but I was also praying, and I was just thinking about how I really didn't like the side of myself. I just felt boring, and I felt like I was really trying hard to make sure people approved of me and liked me, and I kind of was praying. I was like, God, like, I miss being a little bit crazy, and I miss being, you know, a little bit unstable in my, you know, actions, and I miss the part of me that was more free, because I feel like I've just been deadened and boring and following these rules. You know, just so I can follow you is kind of what I was saying to him. And I kind of heard him say, he said to me, Helen, I don't like this version of you either. I didn't create you to be like this. I created you to be alive. I created you to be a little bit crazy. And so we don't have to be enslaved by the idea that we have to please God or that we have to please others. So Sheryl Sandberg is a female businesswoman, and she asked the question in her book about women in leadership. She said, what would you do if you weren't afraid? So I'm going to take a second. What would you do if fear was eliminated, if worry was eliminated, if you didn't have to please God? What would you do if you didn't have to please God? And I discovered this a little bit on my weekend afternoons where I was driving the other day. I drive a lot for work and other things. But I was driving, and I realized that no one in the world knew where I was. I was going from one place to another, and I had a few hours to kill. And I have that luxury because I'm single, and I'm really busy. So people always just assume I'm doing other things. I know a lot of you don't have the luxury to just disappear for hours at a time. But I realized that no one knew where I was. And I was like, well, what do I want to do? No one's going to know what I do. Does anyone care what I do? You know, really, all of a sudden, I filled my life with so much busyness that I didn't know what I really liked to do. I had forgotten what it was that I would do just for joy because I had filled my life with so much busyness. But it's almost April, so in the past 3 months that God's asked me to say no, I guess this weekend I finally had free time where I'd actually said no, apparently. But I was learning what I liked, and I liked to read books and buy coffee. I like to go on walks and go on runs, and I've also learned what I don't like. I don't like cooking. I don't like shopping. I don't like reading Christian self-help books, which you can tell by these 7 that are currently next to my bed, all half-read. I don't like being in small groups. I do like leading my high school small group, but I don't like sitting through church services. And that was a big battle God and I had, because it was Sunday morning and I was going to go to church. And I didn't want to. I was like, I've been kind of sick of church right now. And I've grown up being in church every Sunday, and that's what you did, even if you didn't want to go, you know, because that's what you have to do with 7-year-olds, because it's a difficult thing to make yourself do every Sunday. And so God gave me the freedom in the past 4 months to skip church. I'm like, it's even like hard for me to tell you guys this. I've been skipping church and spending time alone with Jesus, or going on a walk or a run. And that is the silliest rule in the world, but it was so hard for me to break that rule. It's a give and take, because there are times when there are times when God has asked me to give things up, to sacrifice things like drinking or like dating. But then there are times when I think to myself and I let these things imprison me and think, well, if I don't drink, if I don't date, if I don't do these, then I will be closer to God. Then God will love me more. Then I'll be liked more by other people. And I set myself in this prison and these rules. And there are times when I do things like speak and lead small groups, even if I don't really feel like it. But if I feel like God is asking me to, then maybe I'll do it. And you know what? Those have been times when God has set me free in new ways or helped me stay free. So it's a balance. There's a delicate riddle, and I wish I could tell you, here's how you know exactly what to do and what not to do. And some of you are thinking and making a list like, okay, stay free. If I stay free, I'm going to do this and do that. Like, no, that's exactly what we're trying to stay away from. Erase your notes. The goal is to live each day in the pleasure of who God is, in the joy of who He made you to be, and find what you love to do and do it for Jesus. I thought, when I grew up, I would be Mother Teresa. I thought that that was the ultimate service. I thought that was the best Christian possible, was someone who would give up everything, move to India, and serve the poorest of the poor. And I remember the freedom I felt when I read her story, finally, and found that she wanted to do that. She discovered that calling on her life when she was 12 years old. She had a very hospitable mother who always took in the sick, and she went to her priest, and she told him, I found what I want to do. I want to be a nun. I want to go to the poorest people in the world, and I want to serve them. And this is what the priest said to her. He told her she had to wait a few years before she could enter a convent, but he said, joy is your compass. Joy is your compass. God has created you to find joy. And that does not mean every day is going to be joyful. I believe God has called me to work this job. I've been working for a couple years now as a sales rep for automotive manufacturing companies, and it's not a super joyful job for me. It doesn't bring me a ton of joy. It wasn't joy that brought me into this job, but there have been moments of joy. But I believe the true calling of my life will be one that I will use joy as my compass to find. Whether it's like these women in the Bible, Lydia was a businesswoman when she met Christ. And then she used her profits and business skills to sustain the church, to help run a church out of her home. Priscilla worked alongside her husband making tents before she met Christ, and then she worked alongside her husband for Christ. They are almost always mentioned together. You guys saw that. Martha served the men before she met Jesus, and then she served Jesus. And then she served the men and Jesus, and I assume she served the men until she died for Jesus. Mary didn't serve the men, but listened to Jesus when she met him. And then she kept listening, which you will see, and you don't hear of her serving again. Maybe God's freedom for you isn't this abandonment of everything you've known. Maybe it's not this, radical call to India like Mother Teresa, like I thought I had to have. but maybe it's a new purpose of what you love, of what is fun, and what brings you joy. And that's what God's teaching me. I am praying about going, I'm praying, I've applied, I've been accepted, and I think I'm going to law school. See, I can't even say it. I am going to law school in the fall. And that's terrifying. And that wasn't something that I was like, yes, law school sounds like so much fun. Like, God told me months ago, and I was like, nope, I did not hear that. Nope, that's not happening. And I've been praying. And I've been praying and praying to make sure that I'm doing this, not because I think it's who I should be to draw myself closer to Christ, not so that I can make myself more useful for Christ. Those are the lies I've had to stand in the mirror and say, Helen, are you doing this to impress people? Are you doing this because you have a point to prove? Or are you doing this because you think God has created you and wired you in a way that this could bring you joy, that this could bring him joy, and you and him joy together? And that's the lessons that we're learning. That's the lessons that these women learned, was that Christ was freedom. They were so filled with joy in his presence, in emotions, and tears, and following him around and serving. And that's all I really want you guys to learn, is that it's not about setting up these rules. It's not putting yourself like, okay, as long as I stop drinking, stop smoking, and don't look at that magazine, and don't read this book, then I'm a Christian. Because those are the lies that Satan loves to just roll out there and say, yeah, focus on these things. Put more rules around yourself. Do that. Because he knows that that's not going to bring you fulfillment. Because he knows that the only true life change comes from a joyful, personal relationship with Jesus. And meeting him and being with him in whatever way that he leads you to. And I think I put the next verse in this. And this is what God said to me. Even before we did the Galatians study, I had this verse kind of back in December. He said, you are running the race so well. Who has held you back from following the truth? And at this point, I thought I was running the race really well. I'm like, no, I'm leading this small group, and I'm doing this, and I don't do that. And my friends are doing this, but I didn't go there. You know, really like, God, like, I'm running the race well. But the truth was, I was holding myself back. Satan was holding me back by imposing lies and imposing rules. And Paul says, it certainly isn't God, for he is the one who called you to freedom. So if you feel like God is calling you to a life of bondage, or a life of regulation, or a life that is imprisoning, Paul would say, certainly. It certainly isn't God, because he has called us to freedom. I'm going to pray for us. Lord, thank you so much for the gift of your son. Thank you so much for meeting these women where they were, for providing a radical freedom for them, just as you provide a radical freedom for us. God, I pray you will continue to speak to us through their stories as we read through the New Testament. God, I pray you will continue to speak to us the rest of the spring and this summer, God, about how you want us to stay free, about the gifts that you have given us, about the things that we love and how you want to use them for yourself and for your kingdom, God. I pray you will help us redefine what it means to follow you in our own lives, God, and that we will listen closely to your voice and be set free by your Holy Spirit. In your name.